Looking for some new art inspired by the national parks? Then be sure to check out our online store, The Gaze Shop.
This season, as we explore the landscapes of Olympic National Park, Mount Rainier National Park, Carlsbad Cavern National Park, and Guadalupe Mountains National Park, we've got some new items and designs coming your way.
Introducing our Olympic National Park and Mount Rainier National Park posters. These 12 by 18 posters make a great addition to any home or office, or a great gift for any lover of the national parks, even if that national parks lover is you.
Whether it's art for your wall or a sticker for your water bottle, you're sure to find something that sparks your love of the outdoors. Visit shop.gazeatthenationalparks.com to bring some of the national parks home with you.
Hello and welcome to Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. I'm Dusty.
And I'm Mike, and welcome to our Season 7 Summit. Looks like we made it.
I'm unclear of that song, but I think you're trying to say like, looks like we made it. Look how far we've come. Is that what you're doing?
No, but we could have gone that route.
I thought we were going Shania. This is Gaze at the National Parks. What were you singing?
I think it's a song from the 70s, but I got nothing.
Okay, great. Well, our summit episodes are our season wrap party, and we are here at the end of season 7 now.
That's true.
And it is our way of encompassing all the parks we visited throughout this season. And viewing them through all the different lenses to like investigate them a little bit deeper.
These summit episodes allow us to look at the parks from the season by examining the visitor experience, the history, the environment and wildlife, and on a much grander scale, the hiking and experiences within the parks. Each episode is sort of like a category of Trivial Pursuit. If you've listened to the show for long enough, you know that games and trivia are sort of our jam. The first of our four summits is about visitorship. For any visitor to the national parks, the visitor experience is an important one, and depending on the visitor, can be quite varied. Visitorship or visitor experience encompasses information, visitor centers, crowdedness, and the areas that surround the parks, which may add to the overall experience of the visitor.
All right, so before we begin our episode on visitorship, it is worth noting the drastic changes and upheaval to the National Park Service by way of the newest presidential administration, acts of Congress, or inaction by Congress, the work of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, and the overarching plans of Project 2025. Yikes. It is important to know this because these shifts in attitude and attacks against the national parks and the National Park Service workers have a direct impact on what it means to be a visitor in these spaces. Well, since last year's summit episodes, four additional national monuments were added, including Blackwell School National Historic Site in Texas. We were there. We passed through when we passed through Marfa. Springfield 1908 Race Riot National Monument in Illinois. Carlisle Federal Indian Boarding School National Monument, Pennsylvania, and Francis Perkins National Monument in Maine. The greater work of the current administration is in undoing the National Park Service itself, or at least hobbling it so it can no longer serve the greater public and protect designated public lands in an effort to either privatize the Park Service, sell off the land, or a combination of both.
You can listen to our Trail Mix episodes from this past season titled Join the Resistance and National Parks Under Attack to learn more, but effectively, the current presidential administration has launched a full-scale attack on public lands and their employees who protect, steward, and maintain these important resources for all.
This comes on the heels of a banner year for the national parks as $331,863,358 visitors made their way to the parks in 2024. The most visitation on record ever. Since 2015, with the exception of 2020 and 2021, the attendance of visitors to the national parks has been above the 300 million mark. Many of those years seeing visitors in the 330 million range.
However, this number is not in any way being widely celebrated as it typically is or boasted among parks with the highest attendance numbers. In 2024, it was Great Smokies, Zion, and Grand Canyon National Parks with the top three spots, and Gates of the Arctic, North Cascades, and Kobuk Valley with the lowest three, because those in power are trying to keep the popularity of the parks quiet.
just like voting at 1 a.m. to pass a budget bill that will balloon the deficit and foot the lowest income earners and those at or below the poverty line with the bill, the Republican Party is actively working to endanger public lands through the 1-2 punch of duplicity and executive orders.
Park Service workers have seen massive cuts to their ranks as well as purchasing power stymied in an effort to make the parks only somewhat functional and perhaps less desirable for the general public. This hobbling is but a taste for a goal that is called for in Project 2025, the repeal of the 1906 Antiquities Act, the thing that gives presidential administrations the power to create but not dismantle national monuments.
This is in service of working to dismantle or undo a great deal of what was achieved under these previous administrations in regards to public lands. Moves that helped to close the nature gap, especially for communities of color and those of lower incomes. These new national monuments that were created create better access to allow people to more regularly experience nature and the outdoors. So, along with creating a tax plan which disproportionately punishes people of these communities, this administration also sees fit to deprive them of public lands that have already been designated.
All of these efforts directly impact visitorship and the visitor experience. The Park Service has a deferred maintenance backlog, which essentially are projects that can't be completed due to budget constraints and staffing. At the end of the fiscal year 2024, the backlog for the national parks was in the neighborhood of $23 billion. Now, the parks have managed despite the backlog, but issues like road, trail, and facilities closures, facilities updates, and high visitation are a constant strain on the parks. Add a hostile administration and Congress to the mix, and it creates a perfect storm to cripple the Park Service to diabolical ends.
Funding for the parks and park employees is essential, as is the belief that access to the parks is the right of the public. Lack of staff through targeted cuts make the parks less safe, in the same way that lack of funding makes the experiences in the park less available. Closure and inaccessibility may become more of the mainstay in the park, so when it comes to being a visitor in these spaces, it is worth it to remember a few things. One, plan ahead. Investigate the parks thoroughly before visiting, even if you live somewhat close. Trails may be closed, tours may not be running, facilities may be closed and not fully stocked. Parks may require timed tickets for entry or to roadways or special features. Be sure to book ahead of time.
Two, follow the 7 leave no trace principles. Plan ahead and prepare. Camp and trek on durable, marked surfaces. Dispose of waste properly. Leave what you find. Minimize campfire impacts. Respect wildlife. And be considerate of others. These principles are tried and true and should be the mainstay of any good visitor.
Three, be a considerate visitor. Understand the space you are entering is for everyone. Do a little homework on the indigenous people that once called the space home. Remember, everywhere in America is native land. And be kind and patient with park workers.
And four, support the parks. Write, call, and email your representative in Congress. Put pressure on elected officials to uphold the laws of the land and to not kowtow to wannabe kings or sign our rights away. Donate when and if you can.
So I think now more than ever, it is on us to take responsibility for our own visitorship.
Right? Absolutely.
And the way that we visit and the way that we engage, because, you know, no one at the top cares. No one. And so,
well, they care only to their end, their own ends.
Sure, you know, sure,
it's
sure.
Like, how do we make money off of this? By selling land or by hobbling the park service so it needs to be privatized.
God, like, I just love products. Mm-hmm. Products. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Horrible.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, it's like, it's so important that right now that we're incredibly intentional about the way that we engage.
Absolutely.
And that is something we have in our control at all times. Mm-hmm. And while that may feel very powerless, that can be very powerful.
Right.
And so it is important that we recreate incredibly responsibly.
Yeah.
And are very intentional about exactly how we do it.
Hard truths and sadness aside, the title of my memoir, let's jump in and chat about the parks we visited from this past season through the lens of the visitor experience. From the Pacific Northwest and the wonders of Olympic National Park and Mount Rainier National Park, to the quiet desert landscape of Guadalupe Mountains National Park, to the underground experiences in Carlsbad Caverns National Park, there certainly is a lot to know before you take a trip.
We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land also known as Olympic National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen land of the Lower Elwha, Clallam, Jamestown Skollam, Port Gamble Skollam, Skokomish, Quinault, Ho, Kulit, and Macaw people.
Originally established in 1909 when Teddy Roosevelt used the Antiquities Act to designate part of the Olympic National Forest Reserve, the Mount Olympus National Monument, it was designated a national park in 1938 by FDR. In 1976, it became an International Biosphere Reserve, and in 1981, it was designated a World Heritage Site.
At nearly 1 million acres, the park has 73 miles of coastline and is one of the largest wilderness areas within the contiguous United States, with 95% of the park being designated as wilderness. The park has 3,000 miles of rivers that include 32 named glaciers.
Olympic National Park has 14 developed campgrounds, 660 miles of trail, and 171 miles of road. While we didn't camp anywhere in Olympic, this is something that we would definitely want to do when we go back, we certainly hiked our fair share of trails and drove all over the place within the park. One thing you'll hear us talk about in any of our episodes about Olympic National Park is how much driving is involved. That's because the park is gigantic. See the almost 1 million acres comment from earlier? The other thing that makes driving lengthy within the park is that no roads bisect the peninsula or the park. It's a lot of driving around to get to the next town or the next hiking destination.
Olympic National Park saw 3,717,267 visits in 2024, which makes it the eighth most visited park of last year. This is also quite a jump from the 2.9 million visitors in 2023. Damn, that is quite a bump. And in the last calendar year, 25,000 visitors attended ranger-led interpretation programs. 15,000 junior rangers passed through, and there were 569,000 and change contacts at visitor centers and ranger stations in 2024. It's almost like park visitors are interested in the park they're visiting and getting information from an extremely informed entity. Weird.
I know, right? While Olympic has small towns that surround the peninsula, the easiest, biggest cities to access the park from would be Seattle or Olympia, Washington. From Olympia, depending on where you're driving, it could take you anywhere from 1 to 3 hours to reach your destination, and from Seattle, it could take you between 2.5 and 4 hours. The small towns on the edges of the park that are closest to hikes and things to do are Port Angeles, which is to the north, and Forks, which is to the west. And if you stay in Forks, you can get excited about some vampire fiction, as it is the town in which the Twilight series is set.
Well, there are no ticketed entries like there are in other parks. If you plan on going to Cape Flattery or Shyshy Beach or any of the areas that are in the northwest corner of the Olympic Peninsula, which are not technically parkland but well worth the visit, you need to obtain a permit. At the time of our trip in 2023 and the time of this recording in 2025, the permit costs $20, although that fee is subject to change. If you visit the adjacent Olympic National Forest, if you have the entry to the national park, it should allow your entry to the national forest. At least that was the case for us when hiking Mount Elinor.
While parts of the park could be for all seasons, most people tend to visit the park in the summer months, which allow for warmer weather and the ability to explore a great deal more of what the park has to offer. Though the spring does bring wildflowers and bird migrations, hello Dusty, for those who might have a special interest in either of those things.
While we had a few issues as far as access to parts of the park goes, we could not drive up to Hurricane Ridge as the fire at the visitor center there had closed the parking lot to visitors. The ridge is one of the iconic features and areas of the park, with a winding road that feels akin to going to the Sun Road in Glacier National Park. We made our way up to the ridge line level by hiking and experiencing the panoramas that way, though this option would not be available for all.
Speaking of hiking, the trails were always marked with signage, but blazes or cairns weren't necessarily sights we saw within the park. That being said, the trails were relatively easy to follow through the footfall that continued to cut the path over time.
Of the sections of park, one we didn't get an opportunity to do was Soul Duck, so this is going to be on another journey back. The park's diversity makes it one that is an incredible feast for the eyes and imagination, while the driving is long throughout the park. It is through picturesque forests or in sight of coastlines and sounds. Much of the park is accessed through hiking, but if that isn't for you or it is unavailable, the drive to Hurricane Ridge is well worth the adventure.
We were able to visit the two active visitor centers, the one in Port Angeles and the visitor center in the Hoh Rainforest. Each of these was well-staffed and offered a great experience to those interested in learning more about the park and the hikes that were available. The size of Olympic may seem daunting, but the rangers in the visitor center definitely helped to make this behemoth digestible, if not more understandable.
I loved Olympic. It's one of my favorites. I mean, I think it is my favorite park for vegetation.
Oh,
for
yeah.
For sure.
Well,
for sure.
I think
ferns
you
everywhere, moss everywhere.
Got your green dose there.
Oh, like, I do.
Yeah.
I want to live in that.
You want that 1,000 years of time
all
happening
time.
All the time for you. Yeah. Olympic, this is my second visit. And so a lot of the experiences in driving to Hurricane Ridge happened for me on my first time there. And a lot of what we did in the park was a retrace of some of the things I did right down to our very first hike in the park, which was Staircase and Shady Lane, which was funny to me. Both experiences were wonderful, even though we were there in the summer months and I was there in the summer as well. I think I was there in August and we were there in June. I never felt like the park was incredibly crowded.
No.
I think it's the size. Yes, eighth most visited park, but I think the size of the park allows it to be very digestible and viewable without feeling like you're running into a million people.
Agreed. Our next park is Mount Rainier National Park. We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land, also known as Mount Rainier National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Cowlitz, Muckleshoot, Nisqually, Puyallup, Squaxin Island, Yakima, and Coast Salish people.
Mount Rainier became a national park in 1899 after a 9-year gap between parks being established.
The park is defined by its volcano, which is 14,410 feet tall. That's right. Just like Mount Doom, this baby is forging one rings right and left. But in actuality, the volcano hasn't erupted for 1,000 years. You can hear more about the volcanoes of the Pacific Northwest, including Mount Rainier, in our trail mix, Ring of Fire, from earlier this season.
But while Rainier is an active volcano, the park also contains 28 major glaciers. It's sort of like that poem by Robert Frost, Fire and Ice. Some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if I had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice. So where do you stand on that one? Are you a fire girl or an ice girl?
I mean,
it's going to be fire because we're just burning things up left and right.
I do think it would be fire, probably. If we're talking about ending, I do think it'll end in fire. No,
yeah.
I think like freezing over right now would help things.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm going to be. Okay, so all of this to say, the park is 369 square miles and includes 260 miles of hiking trails, 147 miles of road, 3 accessible campgrounds, 5 visitor centers, and a partridge in a pear tree. And one of these visitor centers is located in Ashford, not in the park proper. So the park could be divided into 5 sections: Longmire, Paradise, Ohana Pakosh, Sunrise, and Carbon River, and Mowich. However, due to an indefinite bridge closure, the Carbon River and Mowich sections of the park are currently inaccessible. The most popular sections of Mount Rainier National Park tend to be Sunrise and Paradise, of which we've only been to Paradise. That is, until this coming summer.
That's right, when we'll tackle the mountain yet again. Well, metaphorically speaking. Though we thought of tackling half the mountain on our last trip. The park is one where timed entry is required for access to the road for the Sunrise Corridor of the park. This is something to look into for anyone planning to visit this section. That being said, while the Paradise section does not have timed entry, the parking lots do fill fast.
Mount Rainier had a healthy amount of visitors in 2024 with 2.49 million, which was higher than many years before, but not nearly as high as 2023 with 2.52 million. Considering that Olympic was the 8th most visited park in 2024 and North Cascades was the 2nd least visited, it means that Mount Rainier is the middle child of the 3 as far as attendance goes, though it edges much closer to Olympic than Cascades.
Because of the small scale of the park, a lot of the popular day use trails located both in Paradise and Sunrise, the park feels bustling. I never felt like there were too many people about, but there was way more of a presence here in Mount Rainier than in Olympic National Park. And while we can't speak to the entirety of the park, the sections that we saw in Paradise did offer some trails that were paved and more accessible, though they were not exclusively paved and often changed grade quite often. A great accessibility guide to the park is available on the park's website and details everything from trails to lodging and how to make the most of the accessibility features therein. And if getting on the trail isn't a possibility, the drive into the park and watching the volcano as it appears and disappears behind the tall trees of the winding park road is really an exceptional scenic drive.
The towns that are closest to the park are Ashford and Packwood, as the closest city is, again, Seattle. From Seattle, it is a little over 2 hours to get to the park, depending on where exactly you're going. This could still make for a great day trip. And from Rainier, a lot of other great natural spaces are nearby, including Mount St. Helens, Mount Adams, and the Gifford Pinchot National Forest. Olympic and North Cascades National Parks are also not too far, but definitely a further drive than Seattle.
When it came to exploring the park, the trails were clearly demarcated. Like Olympic, there weren't blazes or cairns, but there was signage at the trailheads and signs along the trail to mark the way. Had we hiked to Camp Mir, the halfway point to the summit on the Paradise side, that may have been less of the case.
The great thing about hiking in Paradise is that many, though not all of the trails, leave from the visitor center area. This gives you a lot of options as a hiker depending on how strenuous you would like the hike to be and how much time you might have. There are other hikes that leave from the park road or that have small parking lots just off the road, and we do mean small.
And if you're visiting the Paradise section of the park, the Visitor Center and Lodge are wonderful ways to experience even more of the park and its history. The Lodge and some of the outer buildings are well-preserved and really show the extreme weather that pummels the park in the winter months.
Well, I think something to also remember is that you're going to get snow no matter the time of year at Rainier.
Yeah, well, there'll be snow on the trails, yeah. Potentially, but
it may not be falling from the sky, there will still be snowpack
somewhere. Yes, yeah, not as much as there used to once be.
I know.
Yeah, wildflowers also are a big part of the Rainier experience. Got to time that just right, though. We did see some when we were there in early July, late June, but we did not get the full wildflower experience that I think is something that people world over come to see at Rainier.
Yeah. Hey, y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season 1 is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
After spending some time in the Pacific Northwest for more than half the season, it's time to turn our attention to two very adjacent parks, Guadalupe Mountains and Carlsbad Caverns.
We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land also known as Guadalupe Mountains National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen land of the Mescalero Apache and the Lipan Apache. So before we even talk about Guadalupe Mountains or Carlsbad, it's important to note that you should absolutely visit both when you are in this corner of the world because they are so close. Mm-hmm. It would be like going to Sequoia and not going to Kings Canyon, or going to Yellowstone and not going to Grand Tetons. Build it into your plan.
Yes, yes, non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. Build it in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do chat about Guadalupe Mountains, though, first. Okay, wow. What a surprise this park was. It definitely took the baton from Big Bend National Park, you know, from last season, also in Texas, and ran with it. I mean, we loved this park.
Established in 1972 as a national park, Guadalupe Mountains National Park boasts modest visitorship with 226,134 visitors in 2024, which was a slight decrease from the year prior. The park is 135 square miles and contains the highest point in Texas, Guadalupe Peak. Along with this impressive geological feature, the park has historical presence within its bounds as well, as marked by structures including ruined stagecoach stations and still-standing ranches and homesteads.
The park contains three campgrounds, two visitor centers. The Frijole Horse Corral Campground is specifically designed for visitors with horses, as horseback riding is common within the park, with 60% of the trails open to stock. While we didn't see anyone on horseback while hiking in the park, we did often see signs that let those who were riding know when to dismount or to turn back. This was specifically the case on Guadalupe Peak, as the trail is not open to stock.
The visitor center that we visited was the Pine Springs Visitor Center, which is adjacent to the Pine Springs Campground and some major trailheads within the park. While we passed through the breezeway of the McKittrick Canyon Visitor Center and used the restrooms, the visitor center was closed when we hiked the canyon.
The park was easy to visit, and while the trails are not the most accessible to everyone, there are some, including the Pinery, near the Pine Spring Visitor Center that are. The driving within the park is scenic and picturesque, and the roads to major destinations are paved.
As far as accommodations, if you aren't camping, the closest small city is Carlsbad, New Mexico, which is about 50 minutes from the park. The larger city to fly in and out of would be El Paso, which is about an hour and 45 minutes from the park. As we said earlier too, from here, visiting Carlsbad Caverns would be an easy thing to do, considering the parks are about 30 minutes from each other.
I loved this park, and I think I would so go back to this park all the time.
I think it makes it very easy. It's not a park that, just like Big Bend, these are very isolated parks in Texas. So I would say if you're looking to do national parks and you don't want to do something that's super crowded or popular, these are great parks to do. Just do them in the spring or the
great
fall.
Trails.
Spring or fall.
Yeah.
Do not go in the summer or you will melt. Like,
yes.
This is very much so pick the season to go in, and this is like more spring, winter, like fall
sure.
through spring kind of park to go to.
So with that, let's turn our attention to the last park of our season, Carlsbad Cavern.
We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land also known as Carlsbad Caverns National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen land of the Mescalero Apache and the Lipan Apache.
Just across the border in New Mexico and about 25 minutes from the town of Carlsbad is Carlsbad Cavern National Park. This is the final cave park of the big 63 national parks that we have visited. And I would argue we definitely saved the best for last.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. Thank you. I mean, it must have been that sulfuric acid.
Absolutely. An interesting thing to note is Guadalupe Mountains are the same mountain range that run through Carlsbad, which if you needed a geological reason to visit, you just got it. After being made a national monument in 1923, Carlsbad became a national park in 1930. In 1995, it was recognized as a World Heritage Site.
Well, there are a variety of above-ground trails at Carlsbad. People come all over to actually see the caverns. And if you are lucky enough and you're there at the right time of year, you might catch the Bat Flight program. Since we didn't see any of the above ground trails, and since we were in the park too early of the year, we did not see any of the bats. We will specifically be chatting about our experiences here from the perspective of exploring the cavern.
One thing to note about the park is that to explore the caverns, you need a timed entry ticket for your tours. Taking the natural entrance down into the cave or doing a much smaller, more intimate tour like the lower cave tour involves booking a ticket and booking ahead. Ticketing was the case for Wind Cave and Mammoth Cave as well, so this was nothing new. However, you don't want to show up and assume that you'll be able to get a day of ticket. It is way better to book in advance.
From our tour of the lower cave, we had rangers to guide us, whereas the natural entrance and big room were both self-guided experience with placards the entire route to explain different things that were being seen. Though ranger-led programs for these spaces also do exist, but obviously check in on this.
While the natural entrance is entirely paved, because of the grade, it isn't recommended that you travel in a wheelchair or with a stroller down into the big room. The path around the big room is paved, though, and an elevator can bring you up and down into the cavern so you can experience this.
Visiting the cavern at different times of the year means more or less time in the cavern, as the summer months allow for almost an additional 2 hours in the caverns. So it is important to know what sort of window you have in regards to your timing.
If you can only see the park from above ground, then visiting the visitor center will give you a great primer for what the caverns themselves are like. As far as visitor centers go, this is one of the best put together and most immersive in the park system.
I agree. And the educational work that this visitor center is doing is unbelievable.
They're doing a heavy lift.
Heavy lift. So much context prior to going in. And I mean, I have to say, you don't have to ask me twice if it's like, oh, do you want to go to Carlsbad? I'm there immediately.
Right.
And it's also like, you can really experience all of it in a day.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though it's like not small.
No. I mean, you could, if you wanted to do some above ground hiking, you could probably make it a 2 day trip. You know, when it comes to parks like that, even with Mammoth Cave, when we went, we didn't do any of the above ground trails. We just focused on the cave. And not to say that that's not an important part of the park, the above ground trails, but I don't know. That's the reason the park is being preserved is the cave.
Yeah,
for sure. So I just feel like that's the thing to do. The one thing I am a little sad about is that we missed the Bad Flight program.
I know.
But that would be a reason to go back as well.
For sure. I also liked that we did the lower cave tour first.
Yeah.
And then save natural entrance and...
Yes.
Big room for afterwards, mm-hmm. because that was so spectacular.
Yes. So do your work and look into tours before you head here. And as we always do with our summit episodes, let's end this episode with a drag queen and a game.
All right. So obviously this comes from our
extensive
tradition of we've done it since the beginning, Drag Corner, and also ending with Jeopardy style trivia. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Bitsy Ann Pieces.
I'm going to need you to take that more southern, please.
Thank you. I was going to say that I need to offer it as Bitsy Ann Pieces.
Bitsy Ann.
Oh, it's got like a hyphen. Bitsy Ann Pieces.
Bitsy Ann Pieces.
I like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said this before, but my stepmother has an aunt named Aunt Bit. That's her name.
Aunt Bit.
Aunt Bit. Mm-hmm. Bit is her name.
But is it Bet, but said like Bit?
No, B-I-T.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Bit.
Mm-hmm.
She goes by Bit. So, okay, great. Who is Bitsy Ann Pieces?
Well, Bitsy Ann Pieces, I think, she's a clue queen. She's like a puzzler. She's taking little things and putting them together. And she's figuring out how to put like things together that are going to make sense for her on her journey.
Okay, so pause, because I have to add to this right now. Okay. Because I think this really relates to her fashion. Because I think she is like, I'm going to collect this little piece of fabric from here, these cute little things, and then makes these gorgeous couture pieces that are all handmade, that are made from bits and pieces.
So is she sort of like the magpie of drag queens?
A little bit. Like she's going to take like all these different things and she's going to turn them into like just this gorgeous, you know, look that's been made from, you know, just garbage and things that have she's
I'm
found.
Sorry, from what?
Trash. And things that she's found. And she turns it into a glorious look. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I appreciate that. I think that's absolutely true. I think her merch isn't merch. It's a giveaway. And she showers the audience with Reese's Pieces at the end.
I mean, that has to be her sponsor, right? Uh-huh. Reese's Pieces, for sure. Mm-hmm. I got into an argument last night with a group of gays about the pronunciation of that. People who say Reese's Pieces, and I'm like, sorry.
Reese's Feces over here.
Reese's Feces is more like it, right? I'm just like, no, that's wrong. I
Reese's
mean, I get
pieces.
People, you know, have their way of saying things, or whatever.
Sure,
but I'm just like,
but it was wrong.
But that's wrong. Yeah. That's wrong. It is Reese's Pieces, which should now inform you how a Reese's peanut butter cup is pronounced.
Yeah,
and it
Reese's,
not Reese's.
Reese's.
Do you want to get some Reese's Pieces? And if you're going to be like really, you know, horrifying, you could say Reese's Pieces, which mm-hmm. I think is...
That's terrorism I'm is like, what that is.
That's homophobia.
It's verbal terrorism.
So, yeah, that's what I think. And I think she's like, you know...
What she's singing.
Coat of Many Colors.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's what I think she's doing.
Of course she is.
Yeah.
So, Thaddeus and Gentlethems, please welcome to the stage... Bitsy and Pisces.
All right, so now we're going to end with a game.
Right.
And since this episode is on visitorship, you've created a game.
Yeah, so since this episode's on visitorship, it's sort of like the entertainment category of Trivial Pursuit. To that
the pink
end,
category.
The pink. To that end, let's play a little game to finish off the episode. This game is called Season 7 Parks Before and After. This category will use the parks we visited from Season 7 and some entertainment blended clues to have you craft the perfect answer. Are you ready?
I am ready. For the record, pink was where I always succeeded and still succeed in
Trivial Pursuit.
Trivial Pursuit. They did say like, if you watched Pop Culture Jeopardy on mm-hmm. Prime, it's like that is made
wedge.
For the people who...
Are pink wedge people?
Pink wedge folks.
Great. Pink wedge folks. Okay.
I want like a t-shirt that's just the pink wedge now. Great. Oh, I need that.
Great.
Okay, great.
For 100, this prominent, lush, and incredibly ferny section of Olympic National Park with this 1994 film starring Tom Hanks and Sally Fields following a singular character's journey from a boy with a disability to a college football star to a Vietnam vet to a man who ran across America and back.
What is Ho Rainforest Gump?
Correct. For 200... This 2010 heavily CGI-laden film that adopts a classic novel about a girl who follows a white rabbit into a magical land with this expansive route that circles the base of the most prominent mountain for miles around and namesake of this national park.
What is, so you're referencing Mount Rainier,
mm-hmm.
and it's what is Alice in Wonderland Trail?
That's correct. For 300... The opening song of the Rolling Stones' 1968 album, Beggars and Banquets, which repeatedly states, "Pleased to meet you, I hope you guess my name," and might be another way to describe having remorse for Satan, with this Guadalupe Mountains hike that takes you through a wash, up a pour over, and into a narrow and short slot canyon.
Is it like, I'm sorry, the devil, or something like that? I'm sorry, devil. The full answer would be, I don't know what the first section of the answer would be, but it's referencing Devil's Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like, I'm sorry, Devil's Hall?
What is Sympathy for the Devil's Hall?
Okay, there uh-huh, we go.
Uh-huh. But you almost got
getting there.
That was a good, like, synonymous answer. For 400, this 1973 song by Paul Simon, which starts with the lyrics, "When I was a little boy, when I was just the boy, and the devil would call my name, when I was just a boy, I'd say, now who do you think you're fooling, when I was just a boy?" With this prominent feature of the big room in Carlsbad Caverns, and is also the name of a 1980s set jukebox musical.
Girl, I do not know this Paul Simon song, and I'm so sorry I was unable to pick it up from your singing. I'm going to say, what is Welcome to the Rock of Ages?
What is Love Me Like a Rock of Ages?
Great.
Mm-hmm. Great. And for 500, your singing was trash. Is what that was.
Not what I said. Your interpretation will always be yours.
That was a way of saying your singing was trash. And for 500, my trashy singing aside, this rocky, ghostly coastline of Olympic National Park featuring the hole in the wall with this phrase that Ken uses against other Ken at the start of the Barbie movie, stating their willingness to fight in this sandy area.
What is Shy Shy Beach Me Off?
No, where's Hole in the Wall? You have the second part, right?
Oh, Hole in the Wall is...
It's not Shy Shy Beach.
It's not. It's a different beach.
Mm-hmm.
Hole in the Wall was on...
There were all those big trees that were down.
I know. So it's like... It's not Cape Flattery. It's not Shy Shy Beach. It's not the Osage Triangle. It's the other one.
If I was selling houses to people, I would be this.
Real estate agent.
Okay, so that might help you with the name of the beach.
Broker's Beach. Escrow
what,
Beach.
What is Rialto Beach me off?
Rialto.
Yeah, I was trying to get you to get real.
A Rialto.
Rialto.
Your Honor, she's betrayed. That clue took me further away from the answer. I have to say, I appreciate your concern, generosity.
but it was shit.
But like you're singing.
It was shit. Great. Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.